You're listening to the Nightlife Podcast with Indira Naidu.
The book we're looking at for our book club tonight is considered by many to be one of Australian literature's greatest classics, A.B. Facey's A Fortunate Life. It's a powerful memoir of a man who lived through very tough times. He was abandoned as a boy, sent to Gallipoli. He lived through the Depression, but saw his life as a gift, as a fortunate life. The book was first published in 1981, just before his death, and has sold over a million copies and has been made into a film and a TV miniseries. So loved has it become. Is it one of your favourite classics? Why? I'd love to know. Join our conversation. I really love this book because it had a very soft nature spoken way about it, a really gentle honesty. There wasn't, you know, a big lot of fanfare. You don't find a lot of books like that anymore. I think it's why it has stood the test of time. Well, to discuss this book, A Fortunate Life, we're welcoming back our book club regulars, Charlie Bray, who's a bookseller at Elizabeth Books in Perth, and Ellen Cregan, who's a manager at Brunswick Bound Bookstore in Melbourne and host of the Kill Your Darlings First Book Club podcast. Welcome to you both, Charlie and Ellen.
Hi.
Hey, Indira.
Hello. Well, I really am looking forward to chatting about this book because it is one of those books that everyone really should read. I think every Australian should read. It's pretty extraordinary book. Charlie, do you remember when you first read it?
I think I was about 14 or 15 at the time, and I remember being on holiday, and I remember being totally engrossed by the book. That so much so that I don't really remember much about the holiday, and I guess it serves as a reminder that you shouldn't bring good books on a holiday because you won't actually see much of the place that you're visiting.
And one of the stories I understand around this book is that your father, you know, allowed you to keep on reading this book, and you didn't have to go to bed. You could keep on reading it because it tied into one of his childhood memories around book reading.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So my dad, when he was a boy, used to love reading. And there was one incident where he had finished, he was very close to finishing a book. And his dad, my grandfather, burst into the room and said, go to bed. And he was infuriated by the injustice of this. And he swore that if he ever had children and if they ever read, that if they got close to the end of a book, he would absolutely, unequivocally let them finish the book. And so that was what A Fortunate Life was to me. When I first read it, I was allowed the privilege of reading it well past my bedtime. So.
And Ellen, Albert Facey was from such a completely different era than, say, a reader from your generation. What was it like for you when you read it?
So I read it for the first time this month. Which was really interesting. I, of course, know about it, and people have told me to read it many times, but I read it for this conversation that we're having now, and I thought it was so immersive and so interesting, and just it made me really think about the history of Australia and people of Albert Facey's generation.
Yeah. We've just heard from Duncan from Freshwater. I don't read many books, but A.B. Facey's book was so utterly brilliant, so gentle, so humble, so honest, so decent, which is why it's on his list. And another message here, I haven't read A Fortunate Life for many years, but I keep the memoir and often recommend it to people because of the attitude towards life and its very particular slice of Australian social history as well. It reminds us of how resilient people were. Charlie, again, it's a book that is so far removed from how most people, most Australians, live their life now. What about him and his life particularly struck you?
Well, I think for me, what I envied when I read it as a boy was his freedom. I actually didn't think that he was at all. I was greatly impressed by the fact that he could just get on a horse and go cattle driving and things. And so, for me, what was so interesting to me was that a boy of his age and my age, while I was reading it, could be so adventurous and go off to far flung places of the state.
Yeah, the adventure of it appealed to you. Mm. Gary in Wickpen in WA. Evening to you, Gary.
Hi, Indira. How are you?
Very well. So tell me where we find you right now.
So I'm sitting on a harvester harvesting some oats, not on country that Albert lives on at the moment.
But yeah.
Just up the road.
So you were on a harvester listening to us. When did you read it, and what struck you, and why is it this book special to you?
It's special because it's so local. So the Bibbies and the Phillips's farms are now part of our farm. We read it when it first came out and saw the stage play earlier this year.
And what was the stage play like?
Fantastic, yeah. So to the stage play in the local town hall, it was just great representation, and took Dad along to that out of the nursing home, who was around when Albert was a boy, or was a young man in Wickapin, yeah.
Yeah, how wonderful. And isn't it great that you're actually calling us from Albert Facey's, well, from the part of Australia that he writes about. And I can hear the harvester in the background there, Gary. So how many more hours do you have to do?
3 or 4 hours tonight. We can go through to midnight each night.
Yeah, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, very...
And another 6 or 7 weeks.
Right. Yep. All right, so still a lot of work ahead for you. Well, ABC Radio's there keeping you company, Gary. Thank you for joining us and for those wonderful comments. Isn't that wonderful that we've actually got someone on a harvester, in the country that A.B. Facey was writing about, Ellen?
That's so amazing. I was so excited to hear someone calling from there. And especially, the book is so much about farming, that people are still farming in that area today and still kind of have a connection to that story.
Mm. I mean, again, this sort of life, the farming life, the rural life, is very, a lot of Australians don't live that life anymore. It's a highly urbanised country. How do you think the stories that Albert shares with us, we can still relate to, Ellen?
So Albert is almost exactly 100 years older than me, so there's not a lot that we have in common. But I think that the things that you can relate to is the real importance of community that there is in his story and his life story, and at all different stages of his life, actually, from when he's a child all the way through to when he is an adult. Mm. And I think that value in community is something that no human anywhere, Australian or otherwise, can ever kind of turn away from, like being able to support the people around you even when you do go through terrible times, like he did quite a few times. He kind of comes back and bounces back and is leaning on his family and his partner and his children and then just the people around him, which is lovely.
Yeah.
That was something that really struck a chord with me, was the sense of community, and something that we've lost. What I loved was the fact that, Albert Facey, often people that visited Albert Facey's home would have to stay the night because there was no other means of them getting to their home. And so you'd often get to meet a stranger a lot better just because of the limits of transportation. And so I think I really love that. And I mourned the loss of that, I think, even though I didn't live in that time.
Mm. We're talking about Albert Facey's A Fortunate Life on the Nightlife Book Club tonight. Have you read it? Why is it special to you? Do you remember when you first read it? Love to know. Love you to join our conversation. 1-300-800-222, 1-300-800-222, or you can text me 0467-922-702. Charlie Bray and Ellen Cregan are discussing it with me. Elizabeth in Shepparton. Evening to you, Elizabeth.
Oh, good evening. Thank you for taking my call. I was just entranced by the book. My father was a sheep farmer at Urana in southern Riverina in his early late 20s, and walked off his property because of the drought and the depression. And I became a dairy farmer in Berwick for a few years.
Right.
But I've just loved the way it was written, the beautiful way he describes the country. I just loved the whole book, and just wanted to say thank you for sharing memories again for me.
Yeah, lovely. Thanks so much, Elizabeth. Isn't that lovely that, again, those farming stories is that wonderful connection. A message here from Jane from Darlinghurst. I'm an English teacher, and A Fortunate Life was an HSE text for many years. I adored teaching it to 18-year-olds from inner city Sydney, as A.B. Facey's life was such a contrast to theirs. The simple honesty of the text and the man's life was a great attraction to those students. That is a very interesting part of... Oh, we've just got a call through from a family friend of Albert, so I have to take that. Judy from Callaroo. Hello, Judy.
Hello. I was just turned my radio on and I heard you talking about Albert.
Yes.
Albert was a neighbour of ours when I grew up on a farm in Wanneroo, just out of Perth.
Yes.
And I have a little story about Albert. He had a son, Eric, and a son, Joe, and a daughter, Shirley. I remember when Eric was at school, at the Wanneroo State School, and he was a bit naughty, and the headmaster gave him a hit across the legs. Anyhow, the next morning, Albert came up with little Eric, and he called the headmaster out and he lifted him up by the collar. Don't you ever touch my son.
Ah.
I've never forgotten the way Albert reacted to the violence that had been put onto his little boy.
Yes. And
so it must have been a reminder of his own...
Of what he'd gone through as a child.
That's right.
And Judy, how well did you know Albert? What was he like?
Oh, he was a big man. He was just a very lovable man. When he came to our farm, he liked to meet everybody. And he came to the back door and Mum went out and... and there's this big man standing there and he put his hand out and he said, "The name's Facey, Face with a Y." that's all I really remember of him.
Yeah. And so what was your reaction when you heard that he'd written a memoir?
I read it. Of course, I brought it straight away and read it. Yeah.
And what was that like, having known the person and the family and then reading the book about their story?
It seemed as though I really knew that's what Albert went through. I know he had a very hard time, but he overcame it. But he could not stand violence. He couldn't stand, anyone hitting children.
Yeah, interesting. Judy, thank you so much for giving us the insight into Albert and the Albert family, because you grew up with them. That's wonderful. Isn't that extraordinary this is the thing that, Charlie, I find fascinating about that call from Judy, is that this book almost doesn't feel real. Like, Albert doesn't feel like a real person in a way. And so you get a call from someone who knew him. It reminds you, yes, this was a real man.
I know. And that is the thing. You just can't believe that he's lived through such a interesting part of Australian history. And he is almost in my state a bit of a celebrity. There's a lot of monuments to him in the various areas that he was at, and so it was very special to hear someone who actually knew him.
Well, that's wonderful. Adrian from Denison East. Hello, Adrian.
Hello.
Yes, Adrian.
Yes, hi. I'm just trying to get mobile reception here. Have I still got you?
Yes, you have.
Okay. Yes. I'm sorry, am I on the radio?
You are, yes.
Oh, my goodness me, first time ever. I just wanted to thank you for your show, first of all. Wouldn't miss it for quids.
Oh, wonderful.
Having said that, that's a quote from Albert, I must say. Love that book. Amazing. One-sit read. I'm sure we all know them. Couple of things that I remember. I deep dive a bit after I've read a book that I really like. Albert's injury from the war appears to be, from a medical point of view, a ruptured spleen, which went undiagnosed for a very long time. And apparently the book was destroyed once in a mouse plague and he had to rewrite it before it was published.
Oh, right. Okay. Thanks a lot for those comments, Adrian. Alex in Ferntree Gully. Evening, Alex.
Evening, Indira. I first read the book when it came out, 40-whatever years ago, as a young adult, and I was struck even then by his he was extremely self-reliant and undaunted by what he was going through. Nothing fazed him. And what struck me was how many of even my baby boomer generation would be able to cope with all that.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And not only to cope with it, but then to look back on it as a fortunate life.
Indeed. Just one more point, Indira. Back when the book came out, I think if they checked the shelves in the ABC archive, there's actually an audio version of that. It was done many years ago, and I think it was played as part of the Hospital Hour program, because we used to have in on 3LO book readings in the morning.
All right. Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Alex. What was interesting about what Alex said about the self-reliance and then going back to those war years and how different that time was to the time we're in now, and the comment that Judy made about Albert having a very strong anti-violence streak in him that obviously would have been sort of heightened, I'm sure, by his experience in the war. Ellen, do you see A Fortunate Life as an anti-war book?
I think it is definitely not pro-war. I think he's pretty clear about how he felt about how Gallipoli went. But what I think he kind of says about violence with the whole book in general is that he's someone who sees so much beauty in the world, and he's writing as an older person remembering his childhood. And there are all these beautiful scenes in his childhood and adolescence, and even when he's at Gallipoli, where he's really making something that is quite ugly into something that's quite beautiful. Like maybe the isolation of the bush, someone who's been beaten severely might find that kind of scary, but he finds it really beautiful. And so I think someone who's been through so much trauma like he had, being able to find that beauty is kind of an anti-violence stance in itself.
Mm. I think there's one line in the book, I can't quite remember it, about how, you know, a lot of people who didn't fight in the war were treated really badly. And he says, you know, even though I went to war, I don't feel any, you know, bad thoughts towards them because they were smart. If I'd known what I was going to see, I wouldn't have gone to war too. Charlie, what are your thoughts about what he says about war?
What I found quite interesting is that he had those experiences, and then I'm pretty sure his children fought in the Second World War. And what I thought was quite interesting about that was that he didn't discourage them. He didn't try to stop them from going to war. But I totally agree with Ellen. I think it is an anti-war book. He certainly doesn't paint a pretty picture of what it was like. I think he does paint it as a sort of tragedy that all these young men went away not knowing what they were getting themselves into.
All right. Dave in Bondi, hello to you, Dave.
G'day. He's just saying what I was thinking. He was a young bloke in the bush, and he came down to Perth and played first grade footy just on natural fitness, got into a boxing troop, and like the shaman troupe at the Royal Show. And anyway, they all wanted to sign up and go away to the war, and the bloke in charge says, look, it's not like a footy match where, you know, you all go home at the end of the day. His brother was killed in the war, and Bert, who's, you know, the fittest of young blokes, only ever was a bus or tram, trolley bus driver after that.
Right. All right. Thanks a lot, Dave. To Cole from Darwin. Hello, Cole.
Hello. How are you?
Very good. Thanks, Cole.
Thank you very much. Listen, I read a book my younger years, and I reckon it was in the 60s, and it was called My Fortunate Life. And the bit that I remember about that story was he was in the bush starving, trying to get food, and he watched some Aboriginals kill a kangaroo. And they cut bits off it and went and took it home and cooked it. And he went over and got the liver out of it and ate it, and made him very sick because he ate it raw. Now, that was a bit of the book. Now, that was in the 60s, and I could be very wrong, but it was the book was definitely My Fortunate Life.
Hmm. All right. Colin, do you remember that book bit in the book, Ellen?
Sorry, what was that?
Do you remember that book that bit in the book of eating a liver?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I was actually going to mention about that part where he does get lost on the cattle drive and he is too scared. He sees an Aboriginal person and is too scared to approach him, and then kind of finds out later that actually that guy was looking for him and would have saved him.
Yeah.
And there's a nice little point at that part of the book where he sort of reflects that you shouldn't listen to the nasty stories people tell, and you should kind of, you know, think better of people, even if you're scared, and especially if you're scared and lost in the bush with no food or water.
Yes, and it's interesting that we get such a wonderful insight about that period, that time, and the interaction with First Nations people, but from a white Australian's point of view. But we don't often get a First Nations view of that period, do we? That's one thing you do realise when you're reading that book. It's very one-sided.
I would love to see more books coming out from First Nations writers about this period of history, and I think we've clearly missed the opportunity to have a memoir like we do of Albert Facey's, but I think that there's still so many fantastic First Nations writers out there that might be able to give us some historical fiction that looks at this period from that cultural perspective, which would be awesome.
Mm. Greg in Perth, you went to the stage play.
Yes, Indira. I came in a bit late into your show, so I was wondering if anybody had mentioned it. And I saw it about 12 months ago in Margaret River. It was doing a tour of country towns in WA, and a lot of the towns that are mentioned in the book. And I thought the show was fabulous.
Yeah, so it still holds up after all these years?
I think it's relatively new. It was a combination of theatre and a lot of visual display on a screen behind, like a lot of maps being shown, like you could see where he'd walked these enormous distances and all the places that he'd been to, and then it would project something like, say, if he was at sea, because there was a few sea trips, and it would give you the sea, and that would give you the impression of being at sea. So there was a Q&A afterwards, and they were saying that they thought it was a world first, the way that they'd done it.
Ah, right. Wonderful. All right. Well, I hope I get a chance to see it. Thanks for sharing that experience with us. Greg, we're talking about A Fortunate Life, Albert Facey's book, and getting lots and lots of calls and messages. Obviously, it's such a loved book. Read it as a teenager, says Craig in Queanbeyan, and 35 years later, read it this year, and it struck me how much I remembered and how often I would think of things he said in his book in my daily living without even realising it, even today. What a story, and again, a humble, accepting man. Our society could learn a lot from him today. This is the thing that I think struck me most about it, Charlie, when I reread it a year or so ago, is that how would we go if we had to live his life? I mean, whether or not we would survive it is one thing, but would you, Charlie, look back and say, now that had been a fortunate life?
I'm not sure if I would have. I live a very, very privileged life, and so I think I would... if I was to write a memoir, it would be called An Unfortunate Life, and it would be very, very bitter and complaining much. But I don't think it would have been a bestseller at all.
So what do you think of it is about his tone and his view and his attitude that has captivated readers the way it has?
Well, I think it's to endure a bunch of hardship, the hardship that we've talked about over this segment, and still call your life a fortunate life. I think that's just so honourable. And the way in which he writes, you never get the sense that he's complaining about the times. He's just telling you as it is, and it is just a real gentle way of saying something. And I think his philosophy really is that it's a fortunate life is not so much how well you avoid hardship, but you know who you go through that hardship with, and the stories and things that you can get under your belt.
Mm. Yes, very true. And Ellen, what are the lessons for you that you take away from the book?
I think to try and be an optimistic person while still trying to be a realistic person, because I think that's what Albert Facey nails with this, is he's like a really realistic optimist and kind of an unassuming person. And he does try and look back on things and see how he grew and what was good about it and what was good about the good times, and kind of takes the bad times as character building, which is a good lesson.
Mm. Lenore in Brisbane, evening to you.
Yes. Hello.
Hello,
Lenora. Yeah, how are you?
Very good. What are your thoughts on the book?
Yes, I have actually read that book about probably 2015. It was actually recommended by a friend of mine because, you know, I like to read. And one thing that struck me, I was very impressed how this man, Albert Facey, has endured so much after he came from the war. And one thing I always remember is one of the quotes he said, "I never worried about trying something different or having a go at something."
Yes.
I've always believed that if you want to do something, you usually can. Very quintessential Australian for me. I think he epitomizes the true Australian.
Yeah, it's a really good comment, Lenore. I was thinking about that too, that, you know, we tend to hold on to our jobs and we fear if we lose it and how are we going to make money. But his attitude was, why don't you just try it? If you want to, just give it a go. And he did have the sense it would work out.
Yes, that's why I really liked the book, because, you know, it was for me. I mean, not being born in Australia, but for me, having read this book, it just epitomizes what a true Australian is. And, you know, they have, you know, during those times, you know, when they went to war and they were young, but they've endured a lot, but he was very courageous, and he just moved on from one day to the next. And he always had a go at something. So that's what my impression of this book is, and the character he had.
Yes, wonderful.
That's it. Thank you, Indira.
Thank you so much, Lenore. And we'll probably have to wrap up our conversation there. But as you can tell from all the comments we've been getting from listeners, a dearly, dearly loved book, A Fortunate Life by A.B. Facey. If you haven't had a chance to read it yet, I think you probably have decided you probably should after hearing about it tonight. Thank you so much to our Nightlife Book Club regulars, Charlie Bray, bookseller at Elizabeth's Books in Perth. Charlie, thank you.
Thank you very much, Indira.
And Ellen Cregan, who's a manager at Brunswick Bound Bookstore in Melbourne and host of the Kill Your Darlings First Book Club podcast. Thanks to you, Ellen.
Thanks, Indira. And thanks for all the calls. It was so amazing to hear.
Wasn't it?
You know, first person experiences.
Yeah, it's wonderful. People who actually knew Albert. Just remarkable.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.